What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalal, and we are Atlanta Zone. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, the wackiest hijinks and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Oh, Graham, it's going pretty good. I was just saying, I'm staring at some weird dot instead of your beautiful face right now, but I'm like making eye contact with it as well, and I can't stop. But we're doing another remote show.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what a lot of people do nowadays with
in the podcast business. Yep.
Yeah, with internet and all that and that capability. But it's still a little strange. But hey, you had to go to do a failed North Florida crusade and almost get COVID. So
yeah, or maybe I did. That's the reason we're separated today. So a lot of people in the Honda dealership are waiting for the flat to get fixed. We're not wearing masks. No one really came up to us, but you never know. And then the guy who had been wearing a mask the whole time and interacted with us decided to take his mask off when he was giving us the bill. And then the guy who gave us the keys to the car had no mask on. So it was like, okay.
Well, you got to take the mask off in order for people to hear you. Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's just like those NFL referees this weekend, you know, taking off their masks to announce the whatever the call was.
Well, it's hilarious. With the NFL piece, I don't understand why they have. Are they strictly wearing masks because of optics? Like, everyone there has been tested. They're somewhat in a bubble. What's the point of the masks? I know McVay got yelled at on Sunday for having his down half the time.
Yeah, I think it was. It's kind of funny too with baseball as well. You know, they get tested every day, and yet, you know, Snitker. A lot of the managers wear masks, and maybe that's just their own personal protection. They're trying to just be doubly safe. I don't know.
Snitker's not wearing that Andy Reid mask, though. That's what I want to see next.
Baseball managers need to start wearing those during the postseason, for sure.
Yeah.
Those Andy Reid masks. Yeah, hilarious.
Got to be sure everything. Attach it to your hat. Runs all the way down. You're covered. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Breathe really hard into it, and then you won't be able to see anything by the end of the first inning.
Plus, baseball managers don't really need to do anything nowadays since there's universal DH, so he doesn't need to see what's going on.
Right, you really need to start paying attention to the third inning when we have to take out a starter and put into our excellent bullpen.
Exactly.
It was a rough week one for the Falcons. Should we just start with the Falcons and just get it over with, rip the Band-Aid off?
Yep, got to start there.
Let's start with the positives, Adam. I know I never like to do this, but you know what? I'm trying to incorporate more positive affirmations into my life, even when things aren't great with some scenarios, so let's start with the positives. Let's start with the pass rush. Well, let's first start off with maybe just overview of the game. The Falcons lost 38-25 to the Seahawks. It was competitive in the first half, 14-12 at halftime. Seahawks were up. Second half, not so competitive. So a lot of garbage time stats and scoring for the Falcons. And even with all that, they still lose at home by 13 points. So pretty miserable day of football overall.
Yeah, it was really disappointing personally as well. I set up a nice little backyard tailgate, had two TVs going, brought the big guy out for the Falcons game, had some people over to grill and, you know, hang out outside. And I spent most of the first half freaking schlepping around like I'm a bar or something, making grilling food and getting people things. And I wasn't able to sit down and actually enjoy a lot of the first half where we actually played like a decent football team. So then I snuggled into my chair for the second half, and literally within the first two possessions, everything just went to complete shit and we're down like three scores. Like you said, that first half there were some positives. That pass rush was nice. Tack coming out like that, they hit the quarterback 10 times for the day. That's something we haven't seen in a long time.
We recorded three sacks as well, all that coming in the first half. One by Tack, sack and a half by Grady, and a half sack by Dante Fowler. So we were getting after Russell Wilson. And we knew going into the game that Wilson was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league last year, sacked 48 times. But regardless of whether or not the offensive line is any good in Seattle, it was nice to see us actually pressuring the quarterback with our core pass rushing and not having to blitz in order to create pressure.
Right. So if you want to take the rosy look at this loss, which I generally do, but I don't feel it now, but you could just say, look, We didn't have any, no preseason games. We made some mental errors that can be tightened up. Once again, we're out-coached, which happens a lot over the Dan Quinn era. But, you know, maybe they're going to make the adjustments. They see what they've done wrong. They got to put a little more attention on these cornerbacks and help them out so they're not one-on-one with guys like DK Metcalf. And, you know, they're going to come out strong against Dallas Sunday, Graham. And, you know, we're going to get back to 1-1. No problem. It's just one loss.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about how this team looked exactly like they did last year and the year before with just mental errors, not being able to finish drives, receivers wide open for the opposing teams, missed tackles left and right. That's not a concern, Graham. It's just 0-1. It's one loss. We're good.
That's one way to look at it. You can also look at it as the secondary is incredibly vulnerable. Russell Wilson only threw 4 incompletions throughout the entire game. 31 of 35, 322 yards, 4 touchdowns. That's about as good as you can do it. And he did this all with, you know, the front 7 containing the Seahawks rushing attack. They only tried to rush the ball 20 times. They were held to 84 yards as a team, you know. But it didn't matter because they didn't really need to run the football because the secondary was just getting torched. I mean, it was – I think the lack of a preseason hurts the secondary more than anything because, as we mentioned on the preview show last week, is that this team is so young in the secondary, particularly with the cornerbacks, that it's just like – throwing them onto the field, especially going up against guys like Tyler Lockett and Metcalf, is brutal. And, you know, all of them were abused. In particular, Isaiah Oliver on a really critical 4th and 5, when, you know, we're getting pressure on Russell Wilson, brought up a 4th down, and Pete Carroll decides to go for it. And not only do they get the first down, they get the touchdown, just because of some really horrendous coverage by Isaiah Oliver. And A.J. Terrell was burned a lot. It was just a miserable game for the secondary. And you don't put this loss entirely on the secondary, but defensively, it was the Achilles heel of week 1 for the Falcons, no doubt.
Well, what'd you think about them having Oliver on Metcalf all day instead of putting your #1 draft pick over them there and kind of throw him into the fire? Like,
It's interesting because Metcalf had what I would consider was not a great year last year. He's definitely, you know, Tyler Lockett was definitely the #1 receiver for them. But you know, a lot of people were saying this is the year Metcalf's really going to bust out. And so far, you know, if week 1's any indication, he might have a big season. Was tied for the team lead in targets with 8 along with Lockett. I don't know. It was clear, though, that Metcalf had a huge size advantage on Oliver. And it would have been nice to see Terrell at least shadow him somewhat or get some safety help. As I just felt like there was no safety help. Like you were saying, it was just 1-on-1, just getting totally burned. It was like, I do not understand this strategy by Quinn and Raheem Morris to leave these guys on an island against 2 really good receivers.
Yeah, and to be, if we're being honest, like, Seattle's offense isn't like what we're going to see from a lot of other teams this year. Like, they play it pretty straightforward. It seemed like they did make a point, and this is what Raheem Morris was saying, was that they were prepared for Chris Carson, and like Seattle historically pounds the ball on the ground and then will air it out. But they've been kind of pushing for this release Russell Wilson thing, and we saw that this week for sure. So that's the excuse, the coaching excuse, that we were prepared a lot more for the running game and weren't prepared for some of these looks with the passing game. But
shit. That's just pathetic, you know, to me. That's a pathetic excuse.
Yeah.
Like, Russell Wilson is undoubtedly a top 5 quarterback in the NFL. If you're not as prepared for him as you are for the rushing attack, particularly Chris Carson isn't like an elite back or anything. I mean, Jesus God. Russell Wilson has won single-handedly so many games for the Seahawks. Like, he's got to be, you know, the #1 objective is to shut him down. Oh, like that already makes me lose even more confidence in this team. I didn't really have much left to lose. That's just pathetic, Raheem. That's pathetic.
Well, yeah, they're saying they didn't because of that, they weren't able to disguise some of their looks on defense as well as they could have, and blah, 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 blah.
That's just more bullshit excuses.
Excuses.
That's pathetic.
The problem with this team, and that's why I said getting off to a good start is just so crucial here, is because we still have that 1-7 taste in our mouth. And you know that Dan Quinn is on the hottest of seats. So even one loss is just, like, you feel it a lot more than you would a normal 0-1 start, because you don't feel like our coaching is going to be able to get us out of this. Like, I think we have some good personnel out there for the most part, but it just seems like every week we're out-coached somewhere. Like,
yeah, not just on the defensive side of the ball either. I mean, offensively, you know, the offense couldn't get anything going to the second quarter, and they're already down 14-3. So, you know, defense stepped up second quarter. Seahawks didn't score at all. Actually forced, I think, at least one 3-and-out, which was nice to see. But, you know, the offense was just very predictable play calling by Dirk Koetter again. Just throw the ball a bunch. I hate these two tight end sets where he's taking receivers off the field. There was, like, some pass to Luke Stocker or something, and it was just like, what the hell are we even targeting him for?
Oh, he's trying to be, like, Shanahan. Shanahan going to Jabine Toilolo.
I just don't like Dirk Koetter calls a very vanilla offense. Not a lot of emphasis on the rushing attack. I mean, the thing that was also frustrating, even though I know we went down big in the third quarter, was even early on, we weren't trying to run the ball. And Gurley, I think got 51 of his 56 yards in the first half rushing the football. He didn't look terrible.
No, he looked pretty good. I mean, he had some push to him. He
converted a third down in the red zone for a touchdown.
That's a miracle.
Where normally we'd probably be stuffed.
Yeah, the offensive line was opening some holes, but, like, when you fall behind like that, and, like, he just always goes away from the rushing attack. I mean, you understand why, and it's like, do we need to work the opposite way? Start off with this hot passing attack and then work the rushing attack off of that, maybe? I don't know.
I think that might be but I don't know. I mean, he's still, I'm not sure what the answer is, because it would be nice. I don't know. It would be great if this week we just come out with, like, a 2-minute offense or something, kind of like how we were doing with Seattle once we got into, you know, late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, we're just coming out, throwing a lot, throwing fast passes. I mean, the thing that's pathetic, right, is that you had three receivers in Julio, Calvin, and Russell Gage that eclipsed 100 yards receiving. We had 500, I think, and 26 yards of total offense, and yet we only scored 25 points, and the majority of those points were bullshit. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it is classic us. We move the ball fine. It's just you stall out, someone makes a dumbass decision. I mean, you can put this game on a few huge plays that killed us. The 3rd and 23 in the first quarter, after we come out with the field goal, defense looks like they could stop him, and then Ricardo Allen commits the ridiculous pass interference call, and they score a touchdown off there. So, I mean, that completely changes the outlook of the game. And then the 4th and 5 that you mentioned as well, and then we're just chasing him after that. I mean, that's 14 points right there off the board in the first half, and we were down 14-12. Like, we just got to eliminate that shit.
Yeah, eliminate that shit. And then we also got to mention 0-for-4 on fourth down attempts for the Falcons.
Well, and then that's the other play, the fake punt, where it actually worked out, but then Sherrod Neeson, and I mean, it was a great tackle by the dude. He attacked the ball, but fumbling it is just a killer.
Maybe. Yeah, you can't fumble in that scenario. Like, that was a backbreaker, 100%. And I told you this because I was actually on the road for that part of the game, and Mike Conti was filling in on the radio call for Wes Durham, and it was so funny hearing, because he'd never called a Falcons game before, and he was just like, "And here's the snap. It's a fake. It's a fake, and he's going to get the first down. The Falcons have a first down. Can you believe it? They converted a fake punt." And then Archer's just in the background. He just goes, "He fumbled it." And then Mike Conley's like, "And the ball's on the ground. And the Seahawks have it. Oh, no."
I That sounds just like me. I was sitting up next to the TV, saw the scenario. I was like, we should fake it here. We should fake it. And then they do fake it. I was like, they did fake it. He got it. He got it. I'm like, turned around, smiling at everyone, all excited. And then Drew's just like, yeah, you fumbled it, man. I'm like, oh no, that did not go the way I wanted to.
Yeah, that was rough. But then just like every other, we tried to convert fourth down three more times, could not do it. One of those was also a sack in the third quarter, which was brutal, which was another backbreaker that we gave up. And I just don't know, like, there's a really sick part of me, Adam, and you know me, like, you know my adoration for Matt Ryan and Julio and Grady, you know, our best players. There's a really sick part of me that wants to just trade everybody and say fuck it and just completely nuke the franchise and just rebuild from the ground up. Like, new coaches, Arthur Blank sell the team, new player, like, fuck it. Like, I've kind of had it up to here with everything. Because even Matt Ryan, I think, shoulders some blame here in the sense that it's like, for whatever reason, when we get in the red zone, particularly post the Super Bowl season, we are just inefficient in the red zone. We can move the ball all we want, but once we get to the 20, it's like, what the hell needs to happen? Like, what the hell needs to happen for us to be a more efficient red zone team? We have Todd Gurley now. We have Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, Hayden Hurst, which I know isn't, like, in the same category as those guys, but, I mean, there are good offensive pieces here. Is it Cutter? Is it Matt? I mean, Matt is one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life throwing fade routes to receivers in the end zone. He's been horrible at that his entire career. It's never been good. If he's going to hit somebody with a touchdown, it's going to be in front of him. He can't throw a fade route to save his life. And it's like, what the hell prevents just Matt and the offensive unit from being efficient in the red zone? I don't get it. If it's him or Cutter or what, but it's very frustrating to see the amount of talent that we have. And I know the offensive line is still, you know, working the kinks out sometimes, but I got to put a lot of blame on Matt with and Dirk Cutter with our inefficiencies in the red zone.
Do you give Cutter some slack? 'Cause he's not running his offense. Like,
I mean, no, he's
attempting to run an offense that he's not comfortable with. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's a bad fit. It's square peg, round hole bullshit stuff.
It's like Dan Quinn's head coaching career could just come down to a couple of bad hires as offensive coordinators, and Sarkisian and now Cutter.
For sure.
Well, Graham, let's take a we didn't do this in our preview show, but now that we're 0-1, and it appears you're ready for the rebuild after being 0-1.
So, I know I'm having a knee jerk reaction, but I mean, how can you watch that game and not just feel like, you know, what's going to change? How's it going to get better?
In fairness, we looked better in this. We always suck in week one, and we looked a lot better in this week one than we did last year's week one against the Vikings.
I guess. I mean, we had a good second quarter. I guess that's all you can really say. Like, that's it, honestly. Because the first quarter sucked for the offense. Second quarter was good on both sides of the ball.
I mean, yeah,
overall.
There were.
But you're still down 14-3. You're still sleepwalking through the first quarter.
Here's the problem.
Even though it was a better game than the Vikings game last year, no doubt. But Jesus.
So that's something positive.
I guess, so, but it's like a reduced version of last year's game.
So now that you've seen a game, I want to go through the schedule up into the bye, and we'll talk through it, but let's see what we predict our schedule is going to be up to the bye.
All right, we have a bye, Adam, and let's see.
Week 10 is our bye.
Week 10 is our bye, okay.
All right, so.
So we play Dallas next week.
Dallas this week. What do you think there?
Or this week, yeah. I think we lose that game. I think Dallas, even though they have issues in their secondary, I think this is going to be a shootout. They have issues in their secondary. I think they have a slightly better defense, and I think their receivers and Zeke are just going to destroy us. I think Dak's going to destroy us. I think it'll be a high. I think it's going to be like that Texans game last year where we put up like 38 points or whatever, but we gave up like 50 or whatever the hell it was. It's going to be something like that. It's going to be like 51 to 38 or something.
Yeah. I mean,
we're going to lose this game.
They've got arguably better playmakers than the Seahawks did, and Russell Wilson went 30 of 34. And
right.
Dak is arguably just as good as him, if not better.
I don't know if I put him the same – I say as good as him, but he's, you know, he's a very good quarterback. He had a great season last year.
All right, so 0-2. That's a tough start. We got the Bears week 3 at home. Can we win that one?
That just looks like a classic game that we would lose, you know, but we should win that game.
All right, so
100%.
We'll say 1-2, right?
Yeah.
If we lose to Mitchell Trubisky and go 0-3,
Dan Quinn's got
to
be fired.
Dan Quinn's fired. Yeah, we'll say that much.
Yeah.
Week 4 at Green Bay, that's got to be a loss, right?
Oh, yeah. No doubt. And you see, like, the clinic that
Monday night.
Aaron Rodgers and what's his name? Devontae Adams put on last week. I mean, it was absurd. Like, Devontae Adams might have 4 receiving touchdowns.
Their defense is kind of trash, though, so it could be another shootout. But
I think it will be a shootout. Once again, it'll be like the Texans from last year, like 51-38.
Okay, so that's 1-3.
Yeah.
Hell
of the first quarter of the year.
Week 5, Carolina at home. They looked better than you would think, but can we win that one?
I think we can give ourselves a win there.
Okay, 2-3. That's progress.
Sure.
Week 6 at Minnesota. I didn't see what Minnesota did.
Their secondary is not what it was. Their secondary is awful. I think we actually have a shot in that game.
Wow.
So but
potentially 3-3.
Potentially. We have a shot. I don't know if I give us... you know what? Let's just say for the sake of argument, give us the win.
Week 7, Detroit at home.
You should win that.
Woo-hoo, we're 4-3, baby.
Oh, baby. Carolina?
5-3?
Actually, let's go back at him. Let's say we lose
Denver,
to the Vikings.
Graham, we're 6-3. Go to the bye now.
No, let's say 5-4. Let's say we lose the Minnesota game.
Okay, so 5-4 is what we're thinking could happen, which actually makes me feel better because I was just thinking of the 1-3 start and how terrible that's going to be when that
But
happens.
Here's the thing. If you start 1-3, do you think this team has the mental fortitude to come back and get yourself to 5-4?
That the Bears game is huge and that Panthers game is huge.
Yeah, those are two games you should win on paper for sure.
Okay, I feel this helps me, though. I feel a little less doom and gloom for when we lose on Sunday.
But, you know what, if we lose on Sunday, I hope we lose, like, it was close. We lost by 3 points, lost by a touchdown. You know, it was like, it was a competitive game. I do not want to get in a scenario where we lose by double digits again.
Are you kidding me with this closing, though? Like, week 15, Tampa Bay. Although, Tampa Bay didn't impress me from what I saw on Sunday. 16 at Arrowhead Stadium. And then week 17, Tampa Bay again. That's tough, Graham.
I still think we're screwed. We're a 6-10 is the floor, 7-9 is the ceiling.
So what you're saying is we're either going to be 6-10 or 7-9.
Yeah,
there's no way we're worse than that. No way we're better than that.
Yep.
So we're picking like 13, something like that. 14.
Yeah, we're picking 14th again. You know, we'll bring Dan Quinn back. We'll have a strong end of the year. And for the sake of continuity, Arthur Blank will bring him back.
But honestly, all it would have taken was 1 year of us, like, just being dog shit bad record-wise. Like, did you see what Chase Young did?
No.
He was a game changer. Yeah. Chase Young, the guy who went number one, who we had dreams of because we started 1-7. He had 1.5 sacks and a forced fumble in his first NFL game. And the Washington football team pulled the huge upset over the Eagles. So all it takes is like 1 year of being the worst team and getting a complete game changer like that versus all these mid-round picks that we keep picking up that are hit or miss.
Yeah, I mean, you think San Francisco did the same thing when they, you know, were in the cellar for a couple of years and really built up their defense. Now they have arguably the best defense in the league.
But then again, we'd probably be more like Jacksonville, who has done nothing with all their top picks.
Yeah, it always comes down to who your scouts and general manager is.
Yeah.
are. I don't know. And we look at Dallas. Dallas had a pretty close game with the Rams. Rams last week. We know we got to watch out for Zeke Elliott, Michael Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup's no joke either. You know, Dak is coming to his own. I think it's going to be a long day at the office for this defense.
Well, if we keep getting that pressure and they make some adjustments in the secondary, I mean, we've got some good safeties back there. Let them help these young cornerbacks out.
What I'd like to see, I don't know, like, have you ever seen the Falcons try to double team somebody in the history of your life watching the Falcons?
No, because the camera is going to be on the other side of the field where someone else is wide open for a 60-yard touchdown.
I guess, but I don't know. I mean, like, I'd like to just see what that would look like if we tried to take away, you know, Metcalf last week or something. Take away Cooper. Make the rookie CeeDee Lamb beat you. You know, it's just like we never try doing that. It's just generic bullshit coverage.
I was listening to the Falcoholic, and they were it was a big bitch session such as this, and their big complaint was how Dan Quinn's defenses, he always keeps the same cornerbacks on the same side of the field. So, like, even when Trufant was almost a lockdown quarterback, they would not have him follow the other team's best receiver, and he would always be...
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's always a predictable defense.
So, I mean, that's...
all the time with how the coverage is.
So that's kind of like what... That's why there's like, okay, let's just put Metcalf on the other side of the field then, away from this guy who's probably... this rookie who's probably better than Oliver. And, yeah, we won't have to worry about it.
So yeah. I mean, it's just another reason why you just got to get this guy the hell out of town. I mean, here's my thing, too. It's like Arthur Blank's 77 years old. He's no spring chicken. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Is he getting sentimental in his old age or what? Does he want to win? Doesn't seem like he wants to win. He doesn't seem like he gives a shit anymore about the Falcons.
You see, Mike Conti read Arthur Blank's book. Maybe we should read that, Graham. It seemed you might get into his head a little bit.
Maybe. I just think he's got a personal attachment now to Dimitroff and Quinn, and he values that more over trying to win football games, particularly with Quinn. It's like, what in the hell?
Well,
it would be different if we had won the Super Bowl. If we had won the Super Bowl, okay, I'm more in line of trying to give Dan Quinn a chance. But the proof is in the pudding in that fucking game.
Well, you understand it, though, because Dan Quinn's the only guy that's gotten us there since 1998, and a lot of the same pieces are still there. So you understand the sentiment of trying to let this guy put it all together. Like,
if he got us there once,
why can't he do it again?
Well, because you look at the last 2 years of what has happened and how horrible we've been. Or not horrible, but just incredibly mediocre.
Well, injuries have been a big factor as well.
True, but I mean, like, you talk about getting outcoached. Like, if we can see that Dan Quinn is outcoached every week, why can't he?
Yeah, I mean,
if you know, what are we? And like you said, I think also Quinn hiring Sark and Cutter was the dumbest thing you could possibly do. Like, he is horrible at picking up coaches.
Yeah, really, just the lack of. I mean, you look at the lack of halftime adjustments is mind-boggling. Like, you look at the Washington football team; they get a real football coach in Ron Rivera. They're down 17-0. At half to the Eagles, and then come back and win the ball game. Like, make adjustments. Like, you're not out of it just because we get down quick. You don't have to be predictable and just throw the ball nonstop. Like, all it takes is a couple stops and not having a 60-yard pass interference call.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely drastically change the game, but I still think the biggest issue we're going to have all year is this offense just not scoring enough points, even though they'll put up numbers, and the secondary just being way too young.
Sounds like a certain baseball team I know as well. But we'll see, Graham. End of week one, we could come back and beat Dallas and be feeling good about ourselves all of a sudden.
Or just put up like a 40 burger and win like 40-7 or something, and then it's like, oh, well, you know.
We're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck Drew Brees. Fuck Tom Brady. We're coming for all of you. Dude, that was the most conflicted I've ever been, and that's why I needed you there week one. And I know I called you, but I was like, I don't know who to cheer for in this game. I hate Tom Brady. I think I hate the Saints more. but it's tough. Oh,
yeah, you got to hit the Saints more.
It's tough.
It was tough, but I definitely did not want the Saints to win just because for as much as we hate Tom Brady, it's not Tom Brady's fault that we lost the Super Bowl. So Drew Brees has killed us for however long he's been with the Saints, 15 years at this point. I am not interested in seeing them have any success. So I was definitely pulling for the Bucks in that game. But yes, it did feel very strange for sure.
There's a lot of hate. But we got plenty of hate to go around.
Nothing but hate and contempt when you're an Atlanta sports fan.
Hear, hear.
Although, not too much hate should be thrown at the Braves, I guess, in the last week or so. Adam, do you want to kick off your standard customary recap? And we'll try to keep it to, maybe a couple minutes as opposed to 38 last week.
Yeah, let's try to tone that back a notch. All right. So since it's been a minute since we've been here, I'm going to do the quickest of recaps. Since we last talked, this was on the 4th of September. We split a series against the Nationals, lost the first two games to the Marlins, and then just casually on Roberto Clemente Day, set the National League record for runs scored, beating the Marlins 29-9. Also of note, that game was the last time that you will ever see our big midseason acquisition of this year, Tommy Malone in a Braves uniform. Despite being staked to a 14-run second inning, he gave up 8 runs. We followed that up with the Nationals, where we took an easy 3 out of 4 from them. And Nationals, they've got, 2 weeks to try to figure this out and get back in the playoffs, but they are hurting real bad. We're currently in a series against the Orioles. We lost 14-1. Tukey time is officially over, Graham. We're not going to see Tukey in the majors again this year. Jesus. That guy needs
this year, yeah.
That guy needs to just spend some time in AAA when they're actually playing games and not simulated games. He just hasn't figured it out. But then we followed it up with the game last night on Tuesday the 15th, which was one of the more enjoyable baseball games I've watched in a while. And I'll go a little more in depth in this since it's fresh in my mind. Waskar Yanoa got the start, and I really like this kid. Like, he's had his ups and downs this year as well, but he just seems to have the most poise out of these young guys this year, and minus Ian Anderson, of course. But he throws up to 98. His slider is nasty, and he just doesn't ever look like the moment's too big. And last night he was cruising, 4 innings, 2 hits, 5 strikeouts, 0 walks, which is huge. And he only had 49 pitches. But then, of course, because it's 2020 and we're the Braves in 2020, his back flares up and he can't at least get through the 5 innings and get the most important of stats, a win. But it was just such an enjoyable game to watch. We got an early run from Freeman, your boy Duvall, who we'll have to get into a little more, hit another bomb because that's what he does. But then this bullpen comes in. O'Day, 1 inning pitch, 0 run, 1 strikeout. Will Smith, 1 inning, same exact line. Chris Martin, who I'm arguing is the most dominant reliever in baseball right now, with his 0.6 ERA, 1 inning, he gave up a hit. But then Shane Green comes in, 1 inning, 0 hits, 0 balks, 0 walks, 1 strikeout. And Melanson closes it out. So it just gives you a sign. Like, if we can just get a starter to give us 4 solid innings, our bullpen is disgusting. And that doesn't even include Binter coming in there. Like, there's still more guns in that pen. It was a fun game to watch. I appreciate a 29-9 win, but just a nice, compact 3-hour game, some good, great pitching, timely offense, very fair.
Well said. Yeah, that was a nice game to watch last night for sure. In particular, just because there's a while there, it was 2-0 in the 7th inning. It just felt like an antiquated you know, mid-90s baseball game where it's just a lot of good pitching, a couple of base hits, you know, a lot of times the side was retired in order.
But you also felt when it was 2-0, you also felt like with our bullpen, like, I'm not worried. Like, last year Luke Jackson's our closer for a while? Like,
no, it was awful. I'm also really glad that Snicker started to use Luke Jackson properly when we're either losing or up big.
Yeah.
As opposed to using him in high leverage situations.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to see him.
He's finally realized that.
Yeah. He might not make the playoff roster at this point.
No, I don't think you need him. Particularly with the emergence of Minter.
Let me ask you this, Graham. Would you rather have a much more solid starting rotation going to the playoffs, but a terrible bullpen, or a lot of question marks like we currently have, but a shutdown bullpen? Which do you feel better about?
I think I'd still rather have like a shutdown, like a three-headed monster. If you give me a three-headed monster, I'll take that every day of the week, because the problem is that if, you know, our starter, you know, one of our starters doesn't do well, and, you know, he could get shelled for 3 runs early. If you're facing a really great pitcher on the other side of the rubber, like a Kershaw, who is having a great season at him, even though I know you don't think he is, you know, you could be totally fucked. So, I mean, there's pros and cons to either way, but I would still rather have a three-headed monster than a lights-out bullpen.
So let's obviously we've talked about this rotation a ton, but let's talk about where it stands now. And tonight's a big night, because what you said was never going to happen is happening tonight. Cole Hamels is making his long-awaited Atlanta Braves appearance. He's starting tonight, supposed to pitch 50 to 60 pitches. Since this episode will obviously be out afterwards, I'll go ahead and predict that he's going to go 4 innings, give up 2 runs, 3 strikeouts,
I don't know. I think he's actually going to do really well. And this is based off of just watching the Orioles struggle last night and where they are as an offense. I've also been following the Orioles not only just because, you know, Alexa's an Orioles fan, but I have 2 Orioles on my fantasy baseball team. And as an offense, they are just scuffling. Other than that Iglesias guy who just can't seem to be gotten out. But they are not doing so hot. Their best player, Anthony Santander, is out on the IL. He's not going to come back by tonight. So I think that's our last game of the Orioles is tonight. So even though I know they put up 14 runs in that first game, overall they've been, you know, on the downturn. They lost 5 in a row before the Braves series. I think Cole Hamels throws 3 innings, no runs, 2 Ks, and a walk in his debut, and looks decent.
Which
is that going to translate to further success? I don't know, but I think he will have a good debut tonight.
But it's at least promising to see. So where we stand now, if we're talking playoff rotation, this is the time of year you do that. Obviously, you got Fried.
You hope Fried comes back Friday, right?
Yep, Fried's back Friday, which I think that missing a couple starts was probably a great thing for him. That was a lot of pressure for him to have to live up to as being our only real starting pitcher. So I bet he comes back fresh and throwing like Max Fried. So we got Fried, Hamels, who they're hoping will build up to 90 pitches by playoff time, which, like I said, we just need 5 innings, if that. Yeah. And then Ian Anderson, he came back from his one bad start of his career to throw 7 shutout one-hit innings against the Nationals the other night, where that one hit was a bunt single. So that's a great sign. You're starting to feel pretty confident when Ian's on the mound. And Kyle Wright actually had a good start as well. What do you go? 6 innings, I believe, 3 runs.
Yeah, and he struggled a little bit with his command, and he got really bitten by the home run ball his start before. But it was nice to see him actually get a chance to go back out there again and not get sent down to the minor leagues. Because he was able to build off that last start. He didn't make as many bad pitches with his breaking balls. Because, like, in that first start, I think it was against the Marlins, you know, gave it 4 home runs. And, you know, his stuff was okay, but, like, when he made a mistake, it was just absolutely polarized, and he was just leaving these meatballs, these slow off-speed pitches just hanging there, and they were just getting slaughtered. But you didn't see that as much. He still had some control issues, certainly, but looked a lot better and was able to build off his previous start, and hopefully that continues through the rest of the year. But, I mean, I think, in my opinion, you got to – if we're talking about playoffs, and the Braves' magic number is down to 7 now, so they're all but assured at least a playoff spot. If you're talking about playoffs, I think you have to do Fried game 1. Anderson has to go game 2. Don't make the fucking Dallas Keuchel mistake.
Here's
like I would rather have a guy who has performed really well the whole season than a guy who hasn't pitched all year and fuck his experience and all that shit. Like, unless he's just absolute daggers and builds up 9 pitches and in his like first half Cole Hamels last year, he's got to fight for his postseason rotation spot. It is not guaranteed.
Oh, it's pretty much guaranteed. I mean, who else he got? So,
hell, man, Huascar Ulloa, fastball and 98-mile-an-hour fastball and slider. I mean, shit.
Yeah,
like, what if Hamels comes in and it's just absolute dog trash?
Yeah,
I mean, and he's, you know, can't get anybody out.
Yeah, so it's Noah and Tomlin. I don't want to go Tomlin at this point with the way he's showing. But
yeah, he's sort of fallen off a cliff a little bit.
The problem is, so for there, we're talking about the 3-game series where game 2 could be an elimination game. Or, well, it's going to be an elimination game either way, either for us or them. So
right.
I agree with you. Got to go Ian Anderson there. But what came out this week, which is huge in terrible ways for us, is that they're doing a bubble for the division series, the championship series, and that's going to change up the schedule. World Series will be a normal schedule, but there's going to be no off days for the division series or the championship series.
Yeah, so you're not going to be able to like pitch Max Fried on
3 days rest or whatever. Yeah.
Right. I mean, he could.
So in theory, you have to have 4 guys, and then Fried can come back and pitch game 5.
Right.
Which but sucks.
I think let's get there first before we worry about that.
Sure.
As we know, Adam, we haven't won a playoff round since 2001.
It's a good point, Graham.
And we have to go through the wild card round first. And you know who we have to play, Adam, if the season ended today?
The Cardinals.
We have to play the Cardinals.
Who have played like 10 fewer games than us at this point.
Yep.
Which doesn't really matter, but you know what? I want the Cardinals. We could beat the Cardinals, Graham.
I would like revenge.
It'll be really would. What's going to be another weird factor for this year is unless we're playing a division team, chances are we haven't played that team all year. That's going to be strange. It's going to be like travel ball when we've been at Menlot Park playing all spring, and then we go and play all these teams in like Winder, Georgia or something that we've never seen before, and you get intimidated because they got some big guy that pitches for them.
Yeah, and throws what you think is like 100 miles an hour, but it's really like 70.
Yeah, yeah. But
it'll be a little strange. I mean, right now the Marlins are slated to go to the playoffs as the 5 seed, and so are the Phillies at 7. So I would rather see one of them for sure, if possible.
I'm impressed with those Marlins. Like, I mean, they've got some good arms now. All those trades, they've got enough out of it, and you know, they've kind of had this mantra, why not us, all year. And I mean, they're actually a quality ball team that could make some noise.
Yeah, I mean, they've been very pesky, for sure.
Yep.
All season. We talk about your boy Freddie Freeman for a second, Adam.
Sure.
Yeah, so Freddie Freeman has just been on an absolute tear recently. Pretty much since August, he's just gotten absurdly hot. He's slashing .352, .465, .653. He's been worth 2.4 wins and wins above replacement. And, I mean, I don't care about those individual awards, but he's got to get some MVP consideration. He's hitting .431 for Christ's sake in September with 6 homers. .529 on base, .862 slugging in September alone. I mean, we are seeing a guy who's ready to put his team on his back come playoff time. We are seeing a fully healthy Freddie Freeman, no wrist issues, no bullshit. Started out slow, because of COVID and has now just blown the doors off the fucking hinges in August and September, ready to rock in the playoffs.
I mean, this whole lineup right now, Graham, is ridiculous. I mean, now that you see it healthy with Ozzy back and Acuna back, like, there's not many holes there. Really, the only hole right now is Markakis, who's not hitting very hot right now, but he could turn that around.
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with your boy Snitker for hitting Duvall. I can't believe I'm saying this. Hitting Duvall in the 7-hole. What the hell is he thinking?
I think he's just doing it because there's a bunch of people on base in front of him and he hits grand slams.
I guess, but I mean, would you rather give Adam Duvall more at-bats or Nick Markakis? Simple math.
Sure, at this point, Duvall.
Yeah, so Duvall should be hitting fourth. I mean, I don't know. I would swap out Duvall and Darnell.
Well, you know what the problem might be? We know Brian Snitker's a big user of this podcast, and he probably heard you about a year or so ago saying Adam Duvall's not a major league quality baseball player.
No, he wasn't at that point. He certainly is now.
And he's got how many homers in September? Here on September 16th? 10 homers.
He has 10 home runs in September.
Hmm.
And we're only halfway through the month. Like 12 games left or whatever it is.
That trade's looking pretty good all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if that pays off this year, then I mean, it already has paid off this year, but if it can translate to postseason success, then yeah, definitely has paid off.
Well, postseason success last year, and we know he's coming back next year, which is really big as well. But Duvall, yeah. Riley, Albies for 7-8-9, that's pretty nasty.
Yeah, the lineup is stacked in the sense that anyone outside of Markakis can go deep. Even when Dansby went through a slump, there was actually last week he was like 1-for-18 or 1-for-20 or something. But when you look a little deeper, his batting average of balls in play was like 0.66 or something, was just abnormally low. And apparently 17 of his 18 at-bats, he hit the ball on the nose really hard. Like, his hard contact rate was really strong on almost every single at-bat outside of one. And so he was just getting a lot of bad luck. So it's not like Dansby has cooled off at all. He was just hitting the ball right at guys. So it's even when people are slumping, it's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how the depth of the lineup.
The one thing I have to say, though, that I haven't heard anyone mention, and I know it's a different game with the DH and everything, but you look at our current roster, for like active roster, infielders, we only have one guy that can play infield right now on the bench, and Echevarria.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Camargo.
Boy, Charlie Culberson was let go.
Yeah, Culberson. I think he's back in Gwinnett now, but Camargo and Culberson are down there. So like, you pretty much have to run with this lineup all day. Like, Ender's your only backup outfielder. Well, that's not true. You got, well, with the DH, it pretty much is. You got Ender and Echevarria. It's just a different game with the DH.
Yeah, you really don't have the need for pinch hitting any of these guys.
Well, and I think they've had to stack the bullpen with so many extra, like, they've got at least one or two extra arms down there right now than they normally would have, just because your starters are averaging like 3 innings a game. Yeah, it's just a whole different game. So these are the guys. So hopefully everyone can stay on it, stay healthy, and we'll ride them all the way. But I mean, having Ozzy back is great. I kind of underestimated Ozzy's presence to this lineup when I was pushing for a trade for starting pitcher, which still maybe wouldn't have been a terrible idea. But Ozzy's a beast, I'll say it.
Yeah, and I'm really glad with Austin Riley coming back down to earth a little bit, to get a guy like Ozzy in the lineup. I mean, you look at what he's done since he's returned. Clearly, his wrist problems are no more. He looked like he was swinging a damn limp noodle out there.
Yeah.
But, in September, hitting .379, .419 on base, .625 slugging with 2 homers and a couple of walks. Once again, playing his consistent defense at second base as well. He's given us a huge boost and further lengthened this lineup, which didn't even seem possible. I would like, Markakis should be hitting ninth if anybody should. I mean, Ozzy needs to be getting more at-bats than Markakis. Everybody needs to be getting more at-bats than Markakis right now.
You don't believe in the old bottom feeding the top mentality?
I mean, you can do that for sure. But I also just look at the math. I mean, who do I want batting more? Do I want Ozzie batting more or Nick Marquez? It's as simple as that. I don't give a shit about the bottom field and the top, because the bottom doesn't have to if you're getting better players more at bats.
You want to hear a ridiculous random stat I heard today that I haven't fully fact-checked, and I'm not even sure if I'm repeating it correctly?
I think this is, if you're going to do it, this is the one place to do that.
The Braves are 13-3 in games that Tyler Flowers starts.
I think it's purely coincidence.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's like saying, okay, this is a bad comparison, but I remember everybody was saying, Robbie Erlin and Ty Malone, it's like 12-1 at one point with the games they started. It's like, we weren't winning because of those guys. We were winning in spite of them. And that's not fair to Tyler Flowers, because he's not doing horrible or anything. But I think, that has zero effect to me on our success.
I'm going to find a stat that you trust. War.
Where's you know, Flowers has done fine this year. He's done bad. But Darno's a better player. Simple as that.
Better offensive player.
Sure.
You could argue that. I mean, we'd have to really get into advanced analytics and see what the pitchers have done in the games that Flowers has started and all that.
Right, but that's also not totally anyone's fault. Right. I mean, that's not totally on them. Like, if a pitcher misses a spot that he shouldn't have, that's not on Flowers or Darno. You have to go a lot deeper. You have to go in like pitch framing statistics and all that shit, which everybody says Tyler Flowers is one of the best at framing pitches.
Yeah. I mean, we said that he's got like the highest. All right, here we go. Graham, WAR for 2020. Travis Darno, 0.1.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Flowers, 0.5.
You said 0.1?
0.1.
Really?
Yeah.
Darno must suck defensively then.
Well, there you go. There's something to it.
I don't believe you.
You don't believe me? I'm looking at baseballreference.com.
No. Let's see here. Well, when you're right, you're right.
Yeah, I mean,
son of a bitch.
It's like not believing coronavirus stats just because of perception,
Right. It doesn't exist because I don't think it does.
What are your thoughts on that, Graham?
Well, I think my thoughts on that is that clearly the defense is playing into Tyler Flowers' favor. Because you look at, Darno's having a really nice season offensively, 318, 377, 523 slash line, 7 home runs. So, he's having a good year at the dish for sure.
No, I mean, I love him, but it's just it's interesting. Do you think Snit looks at that come a game one start?
No, I mean, well, here's the other thing, too. It's like if you look at, I'm actually starting to delve into his defensive metrics a little bit. Negative 0.7 D-WAR. So that's pretty atrocious. Has 4 pass balls and has made 3 errors.
That's big in the playoffs.
If you compare that with Flowers.
I tell you what you do, Graham.
You get up big and then sub Flowers for Darno.
Or if you're
up late in the game, you put Flowers in there.
Or you accept Ozuna in left field.
No.
DH Darno and catch Flowers.
You could do that. I guess. Well, if you look at Flowers' defensive stats, he's a plus 0.3 D-WAR right now, so much better overall. Right. Only made 1 error.
We'll figure this out now, Graham.
He also has only played 16 games compared to Darno's whatever he's played. So Darno's played a lot more than Flowers. Darno's played 29 games. He's played 13 more games.
You think this is a moot? Conversation with all the other shit that's going on?
What's that?
You think this is a moot conversation with all the other shit that's going on?
Yes, I would think so. But I cannot cope with your idea of putting Marcell Ozuna in the outfield under any scenario.
We'll see. I mean, but maybe Flowers has that like what if Flowers and like Kyle Wright just really click? And you have to start Kyle Wright.
And Kyle Wright, the only way I'm doing that is like, when you say click, he's like, you know, pitching eight innings, striking out 12 guys, you know. That's the only way I'm doing something like that. Kyle Wright's got to prove to me a lot. He's got the next, what does he have, two starts left?
Yeah.
He's got to be absolute daggers.
I wish we had
for that to even be a possibility.
Wish we had another couple of weeks of this season left, but these playoffs are coming up.
It's really sneaking up on us, man.
I'll tell you what, man, I'm excited to watch Hamels tonight, though.
Yeah, that should be fun. I think people are going to have the same reaction to Cole Hamels that they had to the Falcons week one. If he's great, people are going to freak out, even if he only throws three innings. If he sucks, you know, people are going to lose their minds and declare the season over.
What are the odds that Noah throws like six shutout innings in the playoffs to clinch a game?
You know what was funny when I was watching Noah last night was I was thinking about Nate Eovaldi of the Red Sox that year in like 2018 when he was just unhittable, pitching like goddamn Bumgarner in those epic Giants postseason runs where they won three World Series. And I was like, what if this guy just like, I don't know, for whatever reason, just becomes a fucking legend in the playoffs?
Well, that's the thing with these, like throwing these young pitchers out that you can't, like, yeah, they're going to look shitty at times, but they're figuring things out. Max Fried looks shitty at times, but he was able to figure it out. And I mean, we gave Newcomb his chance. Like,
yeah, he's done.
But Kyle Wright hadn't gotten his chance. Like, we should have kept him out there this whole time.
Yeah.
Tukey's gotten his chance, I would say, at this point. But
Tukey's gotten a ton of chances. He's started like four or five games at this juncture.
Yeah. So unless like maybe Fulte's actually like looks like a beast down there and they're just saving him for game four of the playoffs and they're not going to even tell anyone.
You're just going to throw him out there at that point. That'd be insane.
Zero games. So it is just still so odd. They pull him after two games and we haven't seen him at all, despite the Erlins and Malones and all these bums that were thrown out there. And Fulte's just doing God knows what. I think he's our secret weapon, Graham, like literally a secret weapon. Like, he's in the bunker right now, just throwing BP to Chipper. Chipper's down there keeping his eye on him.
That'd be great.
I think Fulte makes a playoff start without making any regular season starts. That's my prediction.
Would you put your money where your mouth is?
That's not a bet to put money on there. That's a wild speculation you throw out there. Everyone forgets it if it doesn't happen. But if it happens,
What if I gave you 10-1 odds? So if you lost, you only pay me $10, but if you won, I would have to pay you $100.
I would do it for $5.
All right, I'll take that bet.
That's a ridiculous bet. No, I'm not doing that.
Watch it happen, and you just like throw your hat down.
I would be okay with that.
Well, Adam, we don't have a lot of time left with the Braves this year for the regular season. We got this last game with the Orioles, 3 against the Mets, 4 against the Marlins, and then 3 against the Red Sox. The good news is we're 3.5 games up in the division. We're all but assured a playoff spot at the very least. Should win the division, barring an absolute catastrophe.
That series against the Marlins is big.
It is huge to decide where you're going to be in the playoffs, definitely.
Like, you get swept by the Marlins, things get weird.
Yeah, because we're only up 3.5 games on the Marlins right now. And you look at their schedule, and they've been, you know, they've done a good job against us. I know we beat them 29-9, but people forget that the two games before that, they kicked our butts. So they finish up with Boston, and then 5 against the Nationals, 4 against us, and then 3 against the Yankees. So I think they have a little bit of tougher sledding than we do, particularly with us and the Yankees. And they're probably going to have to face Scherzer at least once with that National Series, so
I think we're fine.
Yeah. You know what's going to be crazy, though? If we have to play the Marlins in the playoffs for any reason, if Urania pitches, you just know something's going to happen with him and Acuna.
True. The Marlins would scare me in a three-game series. They do have three really good arms.
Yeah, that's Sixto Sanchez. He's an absolute monster.
Yeah, he's the guy who came over from the Phillies in the Real Muto trade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a beast. So that would have been Ian Anderson we'd be going up against if we traded for Real Muto like everyone wanted us to.
Right.
But it's exciting, Graham. At the end of the day, we bitch about the Falcons. We bitch about the Braves rotation. But it's nice to be bitching about sports again. And, like, you know, college football is pretty much all coming back now. We got baseball, obviously, football. Basketball is in full swing. I haven't really watched much playoff basketball, to be honest with you. But I'll probably start watching once they get off TNT and get on the digital antenna. Don't tell Bridget that. But yeah, it's awesome to watch sports again. Would you not agree with that, Junior?
Oh, totally. I haven't hardly watched any of the NBA, but you know, it's nice that it's there if I do want to see it.
Atlanta United's there, Graham. They're doing terrible. If you want to watch some terrible soccer,
talk about a team that needs to blow it up.
I mean, you lose your best player. That'll happen, I suppose.
Well, you mean not even just them, but you know, you lose Almiron and LGP and a bunch of other these guys, Larinowitz, who I know is like the emotional leader as well. You're pretty much just left with, and you trade Pity Martinez. Barco hasn't, I don't think, has lived up to expectations. You know, you pretty much just got a bunch of guys out there in Guzan. That's about it. So, I really wish people could go to games like. COVID wasn't a thing, so you could pack the bins and see what the attendance would be like right now.
I'm guessing it would still be pretty high, but who knows? Who knows? We do have a quick administrative word piece here, Graham.
I don't know what that means, but go ahead.
Intern Jared got fired this past week.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Due to lack of hustle and not being able to get us a stat quick enough. I don't even remember what the stat was. Do you, Graham?
I don't. He's also fallen way behind on his liquor and beer duties.
Yeah, I'm not even going to scroll back far enough to find it, but it was something that he couldn't find. And then one of our users, Sam Crochet, was able to find it very quickly and instantly got named Intern Sam. Intern Sam's the one who brought up Todd Gurley's positive traits in the passing game, although I feel like he's close to being fired already because Todd Gurley had 2 receptions for 1 yard, Graham. That doesn't sound very good to me.
No, but you also got to give Gurley a break because he's in Dirt Cutter's offense and he only draws up plays for receivers. So in the passing game.
Okay. We got to keep our eye on that, though. But intern Sam, he shows a lot of enthusiasm. He has actual knowledge of Atlanta sports. He's been a diehard Braves, Falcons guy. I don't know if he's a Hawks guy or not. We'll have to find that out. But for longer than us. And he's got some passion. So he's excited about it, and we might actually get some actual use out of him.
Yeah, a little old for an intern, but, you know, we'll definitely take all the help.
He's just breaking into the sports industry. He went, like, the law route, I believe, but he's realized that that's...
wasting time.
Yeah, exactly. So he's trying to get into the sports industry and do some, like, unpaid work for a podcast that some people listen to. So
it's a noble effort, for sure. Welcome, intern Sam.
We'll have to bring him on air. I mean, it's a big... I mean, some of our past interns, intern Jared was a Patriots fan that knew basically nothing about Atlanta sports.
He thought Chipper Jones was black, which I thought was hilarious. He's like, yeah, I love it too. He's just like, well, guy's name is Chipper. I mean, of course he's got to be black. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? You ever met a black guy named Chipper before?
The guy had like a 20-year career. How had he never seen a single video of him?
It's unbelievable. That's just another reason why he's fired.
Terrible hire. Then we had intern Katie, who actively hated sports, but was very creative.
Sure.
We've gone back and forth a little bit, but intern Sam, we'll get you on air here at some point in time. And yeah, that's the administrative session of the night, Graham.
Fantastic. And yeah, I think that wraps up today's episode of Atlanta Zone, Adam.
Okay.
So we hope you guys are staying safe out there and Thank you, however, and wherever you're listening to the show. And we'll see you again next week. Until then, rise up, chop on, stay in brotherhood, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitominous up.
Hospitominous up.